Well, let me just make this perfectly clear. If there's one master of the missing gap, it's got to be this man. Here comes the Colonel.
Yeah, that's right. Listen to the dumb host on a science program ask all the stupid questions, because that's what happens here. Well, if you tuned into the previous half hour, you heard Sid Johnston tell us about his plan to take care of the entire United States electricity needs using a combination of solar and hydro. And this half hour, we're going to meet a guy by the name of Mark Shearer. He's president of CG Power Solutions. He parlayed his company into now servicing about 23% of the installed wind capacity in the United States. Quite an accomplishment. And he's moving into solar too. So we're going to have some real good questions to ask him about solar. And of course, at the end of the program, listener comments are the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we have here on the set.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I help you?
Okay, the Spirit of the Fountain has joined us, and I've got a good one for you, oh Spirit of the Fountain. What Persian Gulf warrior called his young majors in charge of combat operations Jedi Knights? What Persian Gulf warrior called his majors Jedi Knights?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Ha ha, came up with the answer, did you? Norman Schwarzkopf, yes sir, General Norman Schwarzkopf, actually called his combat majors the Jedi Knights. Okay, it's time for our next guest. When a new wind or solar farm is built, getting the power to the utility customers who rely on it is very, very important, as you could imagine. And CG Power Solutions, incidentally, the formerly MSE Power, has installed nearly 9,000 megawatts of wind energy, which is about 23% of the installed wind capacity in the United States. And we're lucky because we have the president of CG Power Solutions with us today, Mark Shearer. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
CG Automation It provides its customers with sophisticated wind farm management and interoperability, I understand, that today's smart grid initiatives demand. What is this interoperability that you talk about? Can you get into that pretty well for us?
Certainly. Essentially, what's happened in the past is that if you looked at, for example, a wind project would have been a relatively small percentage of the total generation being supplied to a region of a grid.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially the issues of when the wind was blowing and when it wasn't weren't as significant, because if the wind plant accounted for, say, 1% of the total power being supplied in the region, it would be pretty easy for the grid operator to overcome when the wind were to stop blowing. Right now, what's happening is wind plants are getting larger. They're getting to be a larger percentage of the available generation on a particular grid marketplace. It could be as much as 10 or 15% in a given region.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important for the grid to work together, the grid operator to work together with the wind plant operators, so that they can predict when the wind assets will be available so that the grid can have proper generation assets at any given time. There's other issues. Wind plants tend to be on areas of the grid that are very remote, and thus they can cause voltage problems on the grid because they're in such remote areas, as opposed to other types of power plants, which tend to be in more populated areas. So it's important for wind plants to be able to supply voltage support for transmission lines in real time, depending on grid conditions, and the CG automation management systems provide these types of support to allow the grid operators to properly schedule the generation resources, and also allow the wind plants to properly compensate for grid conditions at any given time, so that there aren't any cascading failures. A nightmare scenario could be where a wind plant would be generating power, causing voltage to drop on a transmission line, and that could cause a cascading power outage through a wide area.
Okay, so I just don't go out and start a wind farm without contacting you or a firm like you that can tell us how to set it up for interoperability. And all those things will be very important. And there's been a rising criticism lately about wind farms and about how they're decimating bird populations, migration and that sort of thing. We're hearing more and more about this all the time. Do you see that as a problem or an impediment to new wind farms?
Well, it has in some of the very early projects been an issue. There's been a couple of projects that were built back in the early 80s in California especially, where bird migration patterns were not properly studied, and there were some unfortunate impacts on the avian population. But what's happened since the early 90s, it's been almost a nationwide requirement that avian migration patterns be studied before a wind plan is sited. So there are few, if any, modern plants where this has been an issue.
Is there any sophisticated use of radar or anything to shut down the wind turbines when the bird flocks get too close or anything like that?
No. That's really what ends up happening, is that the plants are just sited in areas where birds do not tend to migrate. In fact,
okay,
a much larger number of birds die flying into buildings than have ever died flying into wind turbines.
Okay, well, that makes us feel a little better. Now, what about aircraft? I was talking to a pilot the other day of a small aircraft, and he says he travels into West Texas, for instance. That's where we're located. We're located in Dallas. He said he travels into West Texas, and he says one of these days, he said, there's going to be a real bad mishap with a wind turbine. He said they're not lighted well or something like that. Can you enlighten us anything on that?
Well, basically, the lighting and marking of wind turbines for aircraft usage and aircraft identification is dictated by the FAA and specified by the FAA. Wind turbines have lights as the flashing red lights as marked on any other large antenna or other large building as required by the FAA. I personally am not an expert on aviation, so I wouldn't know essentially why this pilot was saying that, but I do know that on just about every wind farm that we've been involved with, there's FAA lights on for every certain number of turbines, there's an FAA light, mm-hmm. And the spacing between those lights is defined by the FAA.
Do you find that the difficulty right now with storing electricity is any sort of an impediment to building new wind farms? I mean, is that something that you're looking at, or is the idea to build more wind farms than is necessary, so when the wind isn't blowing in one area, it's blowing in another? Or what's the solutions there?
Well, I think realistically, in the long term, storage is going to be the answer. I'm not so sure that's going to be economical today in the short term. There are many, many people actively working on trying to solve that problem. The technology exists. It's just expensive right now. So I think the answer is that for today, we build the plants where we can. We try to get the best usage out of them that we can, and we continue with our R&D and storage. I think that, you know, we need to understand that wind plants generate their approximately 30 to 40% of their full capacity. So, in other words, if a plant could produce at its full nameplate, could produce 1 million kilowatt hours per year, it's going to really generate somewhere between 300,000 and 400,000 kilowatt hours per year.
Okay, I understand too that you're going to take the same interoperability in plant technology for applications beyond wind into the solar market. Can you tell us what you're doing in that arena?
That's correct, and we are now working on several solar projects, and what we're doing is that we are we're basically building solar plants. We're taking our automation system, our automation SCADA system, and we are adapting it to use for solar projects. Actually, the first project that we're doing that with is about ready to go into construction next month.
Okay.
And we also have several projects in the engineering phases. So we're excited about this development because we think the solar market is behind the curve relative to the wind market. And we think it's just going to we think the wind market's growth phase is still intact and will be strong, but we think the solar market is just entering that type of growth phase, so the growth curve will be even steeper.
Well, we're told that the solar is going to need to be a 10 times better yield than what it's currently getting before it can be taken seriously. And apparently you've got high hopes for solar. Is this the stuff that you're doing in the photovoltaics, or is it solar with heat and liquid and running turbines that way or something?
Right. Most of the work we're doing right now is PV, photovoltaic. We are doing some preliminary engineering on some solar thermal projects, but essentially on a cost per kilowatt hour generated, PV seems to be the best choice today.
The photovoltaics is where it really is with solar. Do you see no future then for heating turbines from sunlight?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think what's happening is that the solar thermal projects tend to be more economical in the larger scale. And I think what's happening right now is that for projects like that to be competitive with, say, fossil technologies or other quote-unquote conventional technologies, there certainly needs to be some sort of price assistance, be it in the form of tax incentives or a feed-in tariff where there's subsidies. Today, on the larger scale projects, and even on the smaller scale projects, solar just isn't competitive with conventional power plants. And the real reason for that isn't that solar can't be competitive, or wind, even on a wind project, that it can't be competitive. With the economic conditions the way they are, the overall demand for power is down. So fossil prices, natural gas prices, and other prices for other fuels, conventional fuels, are down. And they vary. They go all over the place. And, of course, the nice part about renewables is that their pricing is predictable. So a solar project or a wind project, while in a cycle like today where fuel prices for conventional fuels are low, may seem expensive. A couple of years ago when gasoline was $4 a gallon,
yeah,
renewable projects and electricity from renewable projects looked like a pretty good deal at that time.
All right. Well, MSE Power was acquired by CG, and where do you see the future? I mean, are you going to grow exponentially?
We do. We see a tremendous amount of growth. Really, MSE was a group that had been very aggressive and grown. It was a company that I started by myself with $10,000 in my pocket, and
ooh,
grew it as far as I possibly could, but quite frankly, we just didn't have the financial resources to grow this company anymore. And now, after the acquisition, being a part of a multi-billion dollar global company, we see our future as almost limitless.
Well, Mark, you're the kind of success story that our listeners like to hear about. I mean, we've got people from academia that listen to us, and we have scientists and everything else. We've got a lot of entrepreneurs and people that are looking at what to do in the high technology area, and to start a business with $10,000 and all of a sudden be in a position to do what you're doing. And and setting up 9,000 megawatts of wind energy, or 23% of the installed wind capacity of the United States, sounds like a pretty great accomplishment in a very short period of time.
Well, the other side of the equation for us, of course, is that we not only work on renewable projects, the other part of what we do is we work on utility grids, and we do a lot of work in the smart grid arena. CG has recently made a major investment in a brand new research and development center here in the U.S., actually here in upstate New York, which is very unusual for Indian companies to make investments in R&D in the U.S. I can only think of maybe a handful that have done that, and it shows that that CG is committed to this marketplace, and that CG sees a tremendous benefit to their global operations from all the intellectual horsepower we have here in the U.S. That's a big plus for us. We see ourselves as a significant player in the smart grid arena going forward.
All right, Bernard, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Mark Gashier is president of CG Power Solutions, formerly MSE Power Systems, making his way very big in a short period of time as an entrepreneur. Okay, for those of us who are going to be at the IEEE Energy Conference, it's going on the end of this month, the 27th, 28th, and 29th, we're going to get coffee, and that is the compliments of a group called Hanover Fairs, and I don't have any idea what they're about, but we're real lucky to have on the line with us Uli Hammer, who's going to explain to us. Uli, welcome to the program.
Hi, Colonel. Thanks for having me.
Real glad to have you. When we drink your coffee, can you tell us what is Hanover Fair?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's our pleasure to do that. Hanover Fairs is actually the U.S. office of Deutsche Messe AG, which is a Hanover, Germany-based trade show organizer.
Mm-hmm.
And Deutsche Messe AG has been around for quite a long time, and it's actually one of the world's largest and most active trade show organizers with just over 100 trade shows, both in Germany and internationally, attracting several thousand exhibitors and attendees throughout the year.
So where do you hold these trade shows, and what kind of trade shows are they?
Mm-hmm. Well, we really run the whole gamut of all industries, including the information technology sector, the industrial sector, textiles, and you name it, really. And a lot of our flagship shows are obviously based in Hanover, Germany. We own a huge area there of just over 2.5 million square feet of exhibit area.
Uh-huh.
But also over the decades, the Deutsche Messe AG has developed sister events for those trade fairs all across the globe, be it China, India, Russia, really every corner of the world.
Well, let me ask you, Uli, are you the big trade show producer that does the nanotechnology events in Germany and different places in the world?
Nanotechnology is actually one aspect of what we do, just as research and technology is. And nanotechnology is really one of the focus areas of the Hanover Messe.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the word Messe is the German term for trade fair, just to clarify that.
Okay.
And the Hanover Messe is our industrial technology trade fair, basically covering the whole value chain for investment goods, be it research and development, the manufacturing process, process management, and the distribution process. And as you well know, nanotechnology is really a huge aspect for many of those industries.
Well, yeah, and we know that that nanotechnology is big in Japan. And and I understand it is in Europe, and so it's Hanover Fairs that produces the one in Germany, and that's interesting, very interesting to know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And really the areas that I cover for the Hanover Messe are all the energy topics, be it conventional or renewable energies, as well as the research and development and industrial supply areas. Actually, the Hanover Messe, just to give you a better understanding, really is the umbrella for 13 vertical co-located international trade fairs, consisting, as I just mentioned, of energy, which is focusing in on wind, power plant technology, and mobility tech, that is mobile energy storage solutions, but also a lot of other topics like industrial supply, industrial automation, motion drive and automation, and all these topics. And what really has become a very important topic across the board are really topics of energy efficiency and sustainability, which is why the IEEE event makes so much sense for us, because all the cost-saving considerations in conserving energy and just managing energy more intelligently is really close to our cause.
So we're going to be able to drink your coffee and get acquainted and learn all about Hanover Fairs and what's going on in Europe. And when we want to attend a really vital trade show in Europe or other places in the world, we'll know that it'll be a Hanover Fairs event. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And we do hope that we're going to see more U.S. companies at our shows, because given really the vital role that U.S. companies play in these industries, they're still somewhat underrepresented, you know, compared to other more export happy nations like Germany or Japan or the U.K. So we definitely look forward to making new contacts up in Boston, spreading the word about what we're all about, and hopefully see a lot more new faces in Hanover next year.
So firms that want to exhibit in Hanover Fairs shows should get a hold of you. You're in charge of the United States marketing arm, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You got it. We're the U.S. office. We're really taking care of all the U.S. markets over here, across the country, East Coast, West Coast, and Big Midwest. And what we do as Hanover Fairs USA is really we put together specialized marketing programs for U.S. companies. Mostly they will take the shape of U.S. pavilions at Deutsche Messe shows, because as you can imagine, given the scale and scope of our shows, it's easy for, you know, the smaller and medium-sized companies to get lost. So what we do is we group them all together, give them some nice visibility on the show floor, and also do all the hand-holding that you would want as a first-time exhibitor especially. So, you know, that's both before, during, and after the show, be it travel, be it, you know, hotels and everything, but definitely mostly the hand-holding and marketing at the show. So, you know, it's really, we're there for you 24/7.
That's wonderful. You give people very personal attention. I think that's really terrific. So those that that can make it up to Boston or over to Boston, the 27th, 28th, and 29th, will have a chance to meet you firsthand. And those that can't make it or anyone else should know that if you want to know more about Hanover Fairs, you can go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, and on the right-hand side of your screen, you're going to see a nice big link to Hanover Fairs, which will tell you all about it. Well, Uli, thank you so much for being with us today and telling us about Hanover Fairs. And thank you so much for the coffee that we're going to enjoy it at the IEEE Energy Conference at the end of this month. We sure enjoyed having you.
My pleasure, Colonel. Thank you for the opportunity.
And now we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Things in computers and technology have repeatedly surprised us. So when they developed the internet and when they started developing computer technologies, the surprise application was email and Facebook and person-to-person communication, and this really wasn't anticipated. So a lot of times we think of computers and technology as being useful and or existing for themselves, but really computers and technology exist to make things better for people. So computers are about people. John McGee, I'm a researcher at Boston University.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
Waiting for you.